provided by Thomas Allgaier and Franis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about B2B Ignite 2026. Franis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with research-grade account profiling and insights. You can find more info in the description. So what if I told you that nearly half of your lost deals didn't actually go to a competitor?
Right. They evaporated.
Yeah, exactly. They went to absolutely nobody simply because the buying committee couldn't agree.
Which is pretty wild when you think about it.
It really is. So today we're doing a deep dive into the strategic B2B marketing trends emerging from B2B Ignite 2026 over in London. We're, you know, filtering the noise to bring you the critical insights that were shared all across LinkedIn by the leaders who are really driving the conversation.
And I mean, if you followed the chatter online, you saw the backdrop was just incredibly vibrant.
Oh, yeah. Massive event.
Yeah, we're talking about over 600 attendees. Robot sketch artists doing live portraits.
Hey, robot artists.
Yeah. Plus a fiercely competitive darts tournament at Flight Club. And it was all happening alongside this really intense England football match.
But beneath all that carnival atmosphere, the core theme was actually surprisingly sober. Like, this wasn't just a festival celebrating a shiny new piece of technology.
No, not at all. The sources really point to this fundamental reset of the entire B2B marketing operating model. The shift is moving aggressively toward a human-led strategy.
Right, where marketers have to become orchestrators of growth rather than just, you know, producers of endless activity.
Exactly. So we need to start with the ultimate goal, which brings us to our first theme, clustering around the strategic signals for B2B growth leaders.
Because before we touch any of the flashy tools, we have to recognize that the very definition of marketing success at the highest level of an organization is shifting entirely.
Yeah, and Richard O'Connor, the CEO of B2B Marketing, he kind of anchored his opening keynote on this exact idea. He argued that marketers need to become the MVP of their organizations.
Like the sports MVP.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a profound shift in mindset. Because in professional sports, the most valuable player isn't always the person just, you know, scoring the most points or dominating the highlight reel.
Right. They're often doing the unglamorous stuff.
Exactly. The foundational work. They elevate everyone else on the court. They create cohesion between different departments.
Yeah.
And O'Connor is applying that directly to marketing.
So to achieve that MVP status, you basically have to abandon what he calls the old scoreboard.
Yeah, because measuring leads, reach, volume, sheer activity, I mean, that's just a way of counting how busy your team is, right?
Yeah, it doesn't mean you're actually moving the needle.
Right. So the new scoreboard measures actual pipeline, revenue growth, and long-term customer value.
And moving to that new scoreboard is really the only way to solve this massive structural issue that Hilvia Skerskain highlighted in her takeaways. She called it the CEO blind spot.
Oh, her data on that was fascinating.
Yeah. It revealed that 76% of CEOs literally cannot justify marketing investments unless they directly generate leads. Yet, at the exact same time, those CEOs expect marketers to speak the language of the business.
Right. Commercial fluency is the new currency.
But, I mean, I have to challenge this slightly. If we trade in our focus on brand storytelling and creative campaigns just to become, you know, pipeline accountants, don't we risk losing the creative soul of marketing? Are we just adopting this new scoreboard to beg for credibility and budget?
I completely see the concern, but the reality presented at the event suggests the exact opposite.
Wait, really? How so?
Well, commercial fluency actually buys you the freedom to be highly creative. Like, think about the mechanics of a boardroom. When a marketing leader walks in and points to a dashboard full of social impressions and webinar registrations.
Well, a CEO is looking at a flat revenue sheet.
Exactly. Trust breaks down immediately. Leadership will start micromanaging your budget and your creative choices because they just don't see the business impact.
Oh, I see.
But when you can definitively link your strategy to revenue attribution, you earn absolute trust. They give you the runway to take massive creative risks because they know your foundation is mathematically sound.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But if the overarching goal is driving real, measurable pipeline, then our traditional mechanisms for measuring buyer intent have to be completely reevaluated.
Oh, absolutely.
Specifically, the individual marketing qualified lead, or the MQL, it's fundamentally dead. It simply ignores the mechanical reality of how B2B purchases are actually executed today.
Yeah, and Nick Mason, the CEO of Turtle, he delivered a standout keynote attacking this exact issue.
He went right after the MQL, didn't he?
He really did. He challenged the deeply embedded logic of it, explaining why individual clicks or form fills are just incredibly weak proxies for intent.
Because one person downloading a white paper on a Tuesday does not indicate that a 10-person enterprise committee is, you know, preparing to spend six figures on a software integration.
Exactly. And this circles back to the statistic you mentioned at the very beginning. Mason pointed out that 40 to 60% of buying groups fail to align.
Which, when you unpack the psychology behind it, makes perfect sense. You have a CFO focused on cutting costs, an IT director focused entirely on security, and an end user who just cares about usability.
Right. They have completely competing departmental KPIs.
So if you treat one person's interest as the sole indicator of intent, you are ignoring the risk aversion of the broader group. That's why deals just fizzle out into a no decision.
To solve this, Mason introduced this brilliant analogy of the glass slipper.
Oh, like Cinderella?
Yeah. You can't just pitch the main character in the room. Every single influencer and decision maker in that buying group requires their own perfect fit messaging that addresses their specific KPI.
Right.
And Turtle actually launched an intent activation blueprint at the event to tackle this functionally. It's basically a mechanism to take raw intent data, like the digital footprints left by various people at an account, and map it directly to the specific roles within a buying committee.
So ensuring the right message hits the right stakeholder. It's like trying to get a family of five to agree on a movie to watch on a Friday night.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Right, because if you only show a trailer for a gritty action movie to the dad, the kids and the mom are going to veto it instantly. You need a way to highlight the comedic elements for the kids and the dramatic storyline for the mom. You have to orchestrate consensus.
Exactly.
But applying that to B2B creates a brand new problem. If every single vendor is trying to reach an entire buying group with highly personalized messaging, the sheer volume of market noise becomes totally deafening for the buyer.
Which brings us perfectly to our next major theme, GTM systems replacing fragmented campaign activity. Fiona McKenzie, the president of Europe at MarketBridge, gave this highly praised immersive keynote demonstrating this exact overload.
Was that the one with the sound effects?
Yes. She used increasing background noise, buzzing phones, and notification sounds playing over the speakers during her talk to physically simulate the cognitive load on a modern buyer. Yeah, her thesis was that we must aggressively turn down the noise.
And we definitely can't do that by just blasting out more isolated, fragmented email sequences.
No. The solution requires a unified go-to-market system. McKenzie argued that AI on its own won't fix a broken GTM model. The future belongs to what she called systems thinking CMOs.
Okay, so leaders who actually understand how to connect underlying strategy, data architecture, technology, and activation into one cohesive growth engine.
Exactly. And we saw the practical application of this during a live demonstration by Robert Bukitz and Barbie Somoji from Infinitum.
What did they show?
They showcased a clay-powered AI demo to prove that the GTM revolution is truly about data orchestration. Clay, in this context, basically acts as a data engine that scrapes and structures raw signals from various sources.
Ah, okay.
The demo proved that instead of adopting random new tools just to blast more emails, you use data foundations to orchestrate real action. You move away from static CRM lists and start acting on dynamic market signals.
So, looking at the modern marketing tech stack through that lens, it basically resembles a messy junk drawer in a kitchen. Like, we have dozens of specialized gadgets, but we can't find the one we actually need.
That is so true.
So are the experts at Ignite basically telling marketers to stop buying shiny new tools and finally focus on organizing the drawer?
Absolutely. Steve Kimmich from Intermedia Global drove that exact point home. He noted one organization he worked with had accumulated 56 different MarTech tools.
56?
Yes. And only 7 were fully optimized. So when you introduce artificial intelligence into an environment like that, it doesn't solve your poor data hygiene or your broken internal processes. It acts as a magnifying glass that exposes and accelerates those flaws.
Which moves us into our next theme, how AI is becoming an operating discipline rather than just a feature. Because, I mean, you can't build the modern GTM systems we just discussed without AI.
Right. It's mathematically impossible for a human to manually monitor the intense signals of a 10-person committee across thousands of target accounts.
But the dominant conversation wasn't about AI replacing human jobs. It was about the absolute chaos it creates when deployed without guardrails.
Yeah, and Kimmich delivered this vivid comparison for this scenario. He said that unleashing AI agents without strict governance is like letting a group of toddlers loose in a pitch black room with Sharpies.
Oh man, that is a terrifying image.
Right. It's not the Sharpies' fault that the walls get ruined, but the resulting damage is very real. If you just plug an AI generation tool into a CRM where the data is outdated or duplicated, the AI simply scales your inefficiencies.
It will just confidently hallucinate personalized content and build highly sophisticated nurture journeys based on completely flawed assumptions.
Exactly.
And if 71% of CMOs lack decision-grade data, which Kemish also pointed out, then putting AI on top of that shaky foundation is literally just automating chaos. Building on that analogy, if AI is the toddler with the Sharpie, then the systems thinking CMO we just talked about is the parent turning on the lights and handing them a coloring book. Governance is the coloring book. It provides the boundaries so the tool can be creative without destroying the house.
I love that. And that tension between the sheer power of the technology and the desperate need for governance was labeled the creative paradox of AI by Roland Glass from Hello Kindred.
What did he mean by that exactly?
He explained how scaling these tools creates creative chaos that will fundamentally alter the structure of marketing teams by 2026. Roles will shift heavily from content creators to content editors and system governors.
So how do we actually get there? Because Amanda Grimmer from IBM provided a practical roadmap for establishing that governance, right?
She did. Her advice was to start entirely internally. Before you try to use AI to revolutionize your external customer-facing campaigns, you use it to focus on internal productivity. You invest in consistent training, you build data discipline, and you iron out the workflows behind the scenes.
But fixing the internal operations brings up a secondary, broader consequence for the industry. Like, if every B2B company eventually gets their AI governance right, and everyone is using these tools to synthesize knowledge and generate well-structured content at massive scale,
the market just becomes flooded with highly competent but completely average material.
Right. We end up drowning in a sea of sameness. When AI makes competence free, human distinctiveness becomes the ultimate premium.
Yeah, and Wayne Deacon from Bray Lanai dedicated his session to this exact threat. He argued that the biggest danger to a B2B brand isn't a rival product, it's total invisibility.
He coined a term for it too, didn't he?
Yeah, he called it blanding. Because AI operates by analyzing vast data sets of what already exists, which means it naturally scales safe decisions into safe on steroids.
And in a landscape where roughly 80% of buying decisions are finalized before a prospect ever agrees to a meeting with sales, your brand is operating as your first salesperson.
Exactly. So if your brand is indistinguishable from the AI-generated noise of your competitors, the buyer has absolutely no reason to pause their scrolling.
Brian McCready from Adelshaw Goddard challenged the audience to really lean into bravery to combat this. His litmus test for distinctiveness was so simple. He said, if you're not feeling sick the night before a launch, you're probably not pushing hard enough.
That is a high bar.
It is. You have to break out of the expected corporate mold. And Ryan Allman from Henkel supported this by proving that brand marketing and account-based marketing, or ABM, should never be treated as warring factions fighting for budget.
Right. They have to operate as a unified commercial strategy. Brand creates the emotional halo in the scarcity, while ABM captures the specific demand generated by that scarcity.
And Ryan Nelson from StackAdapt took the concept of distinctiveness even further. He emphasized that B2B is ultimately B2H business to human.
Yeah, he argued that marketers have an obligation to entertain their buyers, not just interrupt them with feature lists and white papers.
I have to push back on the B2H concept, though, because it often gets romanticized. Like, do enterprise buyers actually want to be entertained by a software vendor? If a logistics manager is looking for supply chain software because their current system is failing, they want a fast, reliable solution. They don't necessarily want a comedy sketch from a vendor.
That is a very valid critique of how B2H is sometimes applied. But insights shared from the Deliveroo for Work sessions featuring Amy Farrell really clarify the mechanics behind the concept.
How so?
Entertaining or deeply educating a buyer isn't about being funny for the sake of it. It's about manufacturing an emotional connection to build trust. Consider the stakes for an enterprise buyer. Their career trajectory is often tied to these massive decisions.
Right.
If they champion a multi-million-dollar platform integration and it fails, they could literally lose their job. Trust is the most critical component of that transaction, and humans do not build deep trust through spreadsheets and feature comparisons alone.
That is very true.
They build it through shared values, distinctiveness, and just feeling understood on an emotional level.
Okay, when you frame it around career risk, it makes perfect sense. The buyer is looking for a partner who makes them feel professionally safe, but also inspired about their future operations. And, you know, this critical need for genuine value and human trust extends far beyond just direct buyers. It is forcing a massive overdue rethink in how brands partner with each other.
Oh, absolutely. The partner marketing space is undergoing a much-needed purge. Devin Rowe and Russ Powell from Sharper B2B recorded a live podcast at Ignite with a Room 101 theme.
Basically, explicitly targeting the practices that need to be banished from partner marketing entirely.
Exactly. First on the chopping block was pay-to-play marketing, where partnerships are just entirely coin-operated.
Yeah, deciding to partner with a company just because they have the deepest pockets, rather than analyzing what combined value you can actually deliver to the end user, that is a guaranteed way to erode trust.
They also went after gated content that provides absolute zero value. Forcing a buyer to hand over their contact information just to receive a generic AI-generated PDF is honestly just antagonistic.
But the one that really stood out to me was their attack on logo-only co-marketing.
Oh, it is incredibly common. Two massive brands just slap their logos on a landing page and assume the combined brand equity will magically generate leads without actually integrating their solutions at all.
Logo-only co-marketing is like putting two famous A-list actors on a movie poster, but forgetting to hire a writer to give them a script.
Yes.
It tells the buyer absolutely nothing about why these two entities are together. What is the actual mechanical value of the partnership? Devin and Russ made it clear that true partner marketing has to be an equal exchange of value for the customer.
Right. It's about multiplying the utility of a product, not just pooling marketing budgets together to buy more ad space.
So when we pull all of these themes together, from the CEO blind spot to the AI toddlers and the banishment of logo-only marketing, the grand narrative of B2B Ignite 2026 really comes into sharp focus. AI is acknowledged as the ultimate multiplier.
Yeah, it can enrich data sets, it can automate the middle of the funnel, and it can map intense signals at a speed humans just cannot match.
Yeah.
But the technology alone is insufficient. Human judgment, systems-level orchestration, and distinct brand bravery. Those remain the irreplaceable elements on the board.
We absolutely need the systems thinking CMO to build the coloring book for the AI toddlers. We need the commercial fluency to justify our creative bets to the CEO, and we need the courage to push our campaigns until we feel a little sick so we don't fade into the background noise of branding.
Exactly. The technology stack has completely evolved, but the fundamental challenge for the B2B marketer remains stubbornly, beautifully human. Earning trust, demonstrating real business value, and orchestrating consensus among complex groups of people.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, account-based marketing, channel and partner marketing, AI and B2B, MarTech, go-to-market, and social selling. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive, and don't forget to subscribe.
I will leave you with a final thought to mull over. If 80% of buying decisions are made before a prospect ever speaks to a sales representative, and AI is now successfully automating the repetitive tasks in the middle of the funnel, is the future B2B marketer actually more of a behavioral psychologist than a traditional campaign manager?